Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm here's Dave.
And this is Ben.
And that's it for the hosts.
But we have a great guest.
Yes, but yes, we have a very great guest with us this week. John is off, and Pete is on enjoying his anniversary. But to make up for two missing co-hosts, we have a great, wonderful guest with us tonight. Third time I think you've been on the show?
Third time.
Yes. Obviously, he's already speaking. You might recognize his voice. He's the author of the Night Seeker novels. It's Eric Cooper. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Oh, man. My fans love my fans.
So, tonight you actually have here's the thing. We've been doing this Geek of the Week thing where we ask a trivia question to the audience and they answer. Here's the issue. We've let this question slide for 2 weeks and no one's answered. And
the geek is weak.
And the question was, I think it's pretty straightforward. Where and when was the first comic book convention held?
Am I allowed to answer this one? Am I allowed?
Yes. If you can answer it, you'll be the geek of the week.
I would probably have to say, I would hate to say San Diego because it's so big.
Right.
But I feel as though it's more close to home. I'll probably say around Philly, Philadelphia Con.
Well, here's the interesting thing about it. You were closer with the first one. In the sense of, the original convention was known as, was a comic art show. And it was held in 1966. I don't have the exact date in front of me at the moment. And it was held at a place that you and I have both been to. It wasn't called the Hotel Pennsylvania back then, but it was at the same address at, 34th and 11th there, or 33rd.
Okay.
Today it's the home of the Big Apple Comic Book Convention.
Big Apple Con, yep.
Yes.
Correct.
So it started there. They did it for a couple years in New York. Then they had it a couple years in Philly, and then it went back to New York, and then they stopped doing it. And then shortly after that, San Diego Comic Con started up, 1970, obviously, in San Diego. So we're just gonna let this one go, because no one knew the answer.
I forgot the last name. Has he always been the owner of that con?
Of Big Apple, yes.
I can't think of his last name. Okay.
Carbo is what a lot of people know him as.
Correct.
What is his actual list? Carbonaro. Yeah. But yeah, he started it in, I believe it was like 1993 or something, Big Apple Con, which makes it the longest running comic book convention on the East Coast. As opposed to Wizard World Philly or, what's the big one down in Florida? MegaCon. Yeah. So yeah, that's a little piece of comic book history. So now we need a question for this week, and I did not prepare because I was so frustrated by
if I had one to insert, I would. But I don't at the moment.
No? All right. So next week, everyone will return with a question. Or if you guys are getting tired of the Geek of the Week, let us know. You know, maybe we'll stop it. We'll do something else going forward. But I'm a little shocked no one participated. We've been going strong for probably at least 30 episodes now doing this. And the first one, so had to come to an end sometime, right, Ben?
True.
So Eric, you're actually here this week to talk about something kind of serious, I think.
Oh, well, when I call it serious, I would call it something that needed to be talked about.
Okay.
That's the way I would put it. But as far as things go, well, I've been going to comic book conventions for, it's probably been the least, about 16 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much started, at Philadelphia and then went to San Diego and back and forth. But as time goes on, I started to notice that I was like probably one of the first black guys to do Spider-Man on the convention floor, me and a couple other guys. So, you know, if people were kind of unusual about a black guy being in spandex on the convention floor, which is pretty funny. But we got a lot of reputation for what we did because, I guess, in our case, we were pretty ballsy doing something like that. Of course, showing through spandex is possible, but, you know, you know, no pun intended, of course.
Right.
But, you know, as time went on, as we started getting, branching further out with more ethnic diversity in the, as being conventioners and cosplayers, we started noticing that, you know, there were more people doing cosplay, which was great. More black people, you know, Indian, Latino and such and such. But as it came to as guests of being at Comic-Con, as far as the writers or artists went, our creators, it seems to still be more towards the, let's say, what, Caucasian side of the fence. Even with the diversity of, say, gender and such, is that there are a lot of female artists also that weren't getting recognized for what they did in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to say, well, you know, it's a shame that these people aren't recognized for the art they do because it really is valuable in industry, but they're not getting any recognition for when they should be. So I decided to do a petition that voiced, you know, the opinions of other people and said, well, why aren't, you know, people of color or diversity being, you know, advertised as featured guests for these conventions? Now, I understand that the convention guys that own the shows, I understand they want to make sure that they have their profit and such, which is great, but there should be that part where it should be recognized with new talent and new people, a new face to show, well, we are also showing this person that needs a shot at being recognized for what they do with the industry, especially the females. And I signed this petition about a month ago. I've been very busy with other projects. I really can push as much as I want to, but hopefully this show tonight will actually, you know, get that word out there that we need to start having this petition signed and go around to other cosplayers, other artists, and other writers and says, look, we need to start really recognizing people for what they do because it is a valuable tool in what we do to actually bring out more diversity in the industry that shows that we are really trying to get other people from different cultures involved in this because it is an important topic where it just shows more, more of a wide span of people getting involved in the industry and just learning and loving what we do.
Right. No, exactly. It's funny, being a you know, an average white guy,
I don't call you average. Average is a guy that sits at home all day and just plays video games, does nothing that actually betters people around them.
Right. I'd say you're more below average.
Okay. Thanks, Brad. but I've been going to conventions since 2000 and, you know, I definitely can say that when I first went to conventions, I didn't notice that, you know, but more and more as I've gotten to know artists that work in the industry and writers, I am noticing more and more that, you know, and you talked about this before, the first time you were on the show is, it's still unfortunately a male white dominated field there, but there are more. Slowly, there's more females and more people of ethnicity joining the writing and the art, but the cons haven't caught up with that. You know, you get the same featured artists at all these different conventions over and over again. And yes, granted, there are people that are featured that are big draws and they always have a huge crowd at their table and they're making a lot of money for the convention, but, or at least they're drawing a lot of people into the convention to make money. But I think there's a side of this that people don't understand. And I'm going to say this out loud, and this might be a convention secret. So if you feel like you don't want to know convention secrets, or if you feel like I'm revealing something I shouldn't, I don't care. Whenever you see the list of artists and Wizard, you know, Wizard does it, New York Comic Con does this, San Diego does this, they all do it. You got the list of everyone that's going to be there. You have the actors, whatever, and then you have the artists, and there are always featured artists that are on the list, and they're the first five or six out of the, you know, let's say 50 artists that are at that show. Those featured artists who, and these are the ones that I'm talking about, they're the same featured artists that are going from con to con. Wizards paying for their table. Wizards paying for their hotel. Or the convention is paying for their hotel, paying for their flight, paying for the table. They're not, those artists aren't paying a dime out of their pocket. Everyone else that's there, they had to pay for that table. And that's why you'll see artists who are splitting tables, because it's getting more and more expensive to have it a table at a convention. I'm sure you can agree to that, Eric.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, luckily with the time I've been paying my time into the field. And luckily some conventions actually I have been a guest. Also, over the new one, over the Atlantic City Boardwalk Comic Con, I'm actually a guest writer for that convention, which is great. Okay. And I know the guy that's putting on the show, and I mean, he does an awesome job. His guest list is humongous. But I've been knowing about that for a while, that these guys are paid to be there. And like I said, it's a given. But also, the sad part about it is that the independent artists and writers that are at the shows having their artist alley tables, they're paying the fee of those guys being there, of the guests and celebrities being there.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, is, you know, as nice as a draw, it's understandable, it gets foot traffic. But at the same time, they're not even really featuring the people that are artists at certain shows. Like, we pay this money to be there, but you don't have the decency to actually advertise that we're there. You know, it's kind of a slap in the face.
And, right, right.
You know, it's a shame, but we're paying good hard earned money, and also we got to pay for our travel, our expenses to eat and everything else just to be at your show. But you don't have the decency to actually advertise us and put us, you know, next to the guests, or even spread around like the featured stars. And spread around like different stars of where they're seated at. You know, it would be nice to actually have like a cul-de-sac of people around like the main guys. You know, it's kind of like just disperse a little bit. It'd be fun.
Right, right. No. I mean, Wizard World Philly last year is a great example of the unbalance, I think, of Artist Alley that I don't think a lot of people see, in the fact that as Artist Alley, as usual, is at the back of the convention.
Yep.
And when you walk up in the first row, you have featured artist A, who will remain nameless, on one end of the row, who was given three tables, has a display that's about a story and a half tall, that's three tables wide. Yeah. And at the other end of the row, you've got featured artist B, who's got three tables and a display that's a story and a half tall, and they're attention grabbing. And people are stopping at those tables. And about half of those people don't make it to the back of Artist Alley. So, you know, again, yes, you have your featured artists, but you're also putting them right out front. And you're not saying like, hey, no, go check out these guys back here. These, you know, these guys all work for Marvel and DC as well. Just these happen to be the featured ones this time, you know. And
Well, you're right. And like, you know, and I, some of the future artists, I love their work. Don't get me wrong. I even got the chance to actually meet the guy that originally drew for Gargoyles back at the last Philadelphia Wizard World. Mm-hmm. And he was a great guy to be around. I mean, just good energy, you know, good pizzazz. But at the same time, it's like, oh, people love him, but I'm all the way in the back at Philly Wizard. Right. And it's like, hopefully someone comes to the back, you know, and it's like, you know, we're biting our teeth, trying to hope that people don't spend all their money, blow it at one shot. And like, you know, it's like, you know, you can spend some money here too, but don't spend all like one big load, you know, at least kind of diverse it out a little bit. And I do like other cons that, no, I will admit some other cons do this very well, where it would do like almost like a treasure hunt, where you would go to certain artist tables and get like a token or something like that. And at the end of the day, once you got everything you needed, you get like a special kind of grab bag. But right. The great thing about doing that is that it got a person all around the convention to see other artists and other writers. And I think that's a great advantage to actually exposing more people's work.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, but get, you know, when we can complain about cons all day long, but getting back to also the original point is that those two featured artists are, you know, middle-aged white guys that have been featured at least at the last, I want to say, Definitely, they were featured at the last three Wizard World Phillies, the last three Wizard World Chicago, the last three, you know, like a lot of the bigger cons, it's these same three or four guys every time it's featured. And, you know, no offense to them, but it's like, that's another thing is that, I mean, how long can that last for them, you know, where they're selling the same things to the same people over and over again, or just signing books or whatever. Like they, the conventions need to smart up in that sense, I think, and start switching them out, you know, like with people like Joyce Chin. You know, she's a Marvel artist. She's an Asian American. She has done a lot of great work for Marvel. And it's funny, I'm bringing her up because on Facebook today, she posted this and it just made me go, wow, this isn't exactly what we're talking about. But at the same time, it makes me go, there is still this perception in the world. So she posted this, actually an hour ago for this recording, sitting out at a restaurant, for lunch, with Alexander and Arthur. A woman passing by stopped and asked Arthur if he was in the military. And when he said he had not been in the military, but his dad had been, she looked poignantly at me, then asked me if I was the nanny.
Hmm.
When he said no, that we were married, she told us his dad would lose his pension because you can't marry Asian. Ooh. And then she stormed off. This is 2015, people. And there are still people like this walking around on our planet.
That's sad.
And it's stereotypes like that hurt. And how can we punch through that if the conventions, which are supposed to be holding up these people in our community, aren't doing that either? You know,
go ahead, as you're saying.
You know, I mean, I'm saying that, you know, there's a lot of people that sit there and go, it's 2015 and racism doesn't exist anymore, but it sure does, you know, and that's a very clear sign of it. And, you know, it's time to have some people of other ethnic backgrounds featured at conventions. You know, I mean, I'm sure you can think of someone off the top of your head right now, Eric, besides yourself, that should be a featured artist at the next convention.
I mean, people like, you know, I mean, a couple of the guys, I mean, Robert Roach, Eric Battle, and like I said, there are other female artists that I know of that have worked for me. Ashley Woods, I mean, she's a very talented lady. She's out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. But it's just getting the owners to say, look, you have these people that's been paying, especially if they're a veteran that's been paying for a table for, say, the past 5 or 6 years.
Right.
You know, at least give them at least a break and say, look, we're going to feature you as a special guest. You know, we may not pay for your room, we may not pay for your stuff, but we'll give you a free table, but we'll make you a featured guest. Even do something that shows that you appreciate your continual artists keep on coming back to your show because they love their crowd, they love the people, they love the convention. At least show them a little grace. It would be awesome to do something like that for them.
Right.
And like I said, it's just showing, you know, some humanity towards people that are of different color or of a different culture. I would love to see, and truthfully, I would love to see some Indian artists, you know, that put out work and say, look, oh, we got it, you know, Indian, you know, and one thing I have not seen, I should say that there's one guy named Saja that works with me. Mm-hmm. But there's very, very rarely see Indian artists. But one great thing about India, the Indian people from India, is that now you start seeing them going to conventions with their families. And I started noticing that actually about 2 years ago. I said, okay. Now they feel somewhat included into the community now because before you would never see them. Now all of a sudden, now there's an emergence of them coming into the con now, which is great. Which is awesome. It's just showing that more diversity is needed in the industry because it's showing more.
Right, right. No, I mean, and that's, I definitely can attest to that. I mean, more and more there are people of, as you said, diversity walking around at the conventions. And, you know, which, you know, we've talked about this on the show too, is that there are also people are like, oh, you know, you're like, you know, there are people that'll say, oh, you're African American, so you can't be Spider-Man. And it's, well, okay, you know what? now that Miles Morales is around, we can't say that anymore. So let's, but they'll automatically say, oh, you must be Miles Morales. Or, you can't be Captain, oh, I can't do that anymore. Wow. Marvel's getting on board here. but well, you know, but there are those people, but regardless of that, yes. I mean, it's about loving the character and, you know, portraying the character no matter who you are. And there are people out there that are stepping up more and more and saying, yes, I'm a person of Asian descent, but I love the Flash. So I'm going to dress up as the Flash. Or I love Batman. I'm going to dress up as Batman. I'm African American, but I love Thor. So I'm going to put on a blonde wig, you know, and those people want to see their faces reflected back in the artists that are there, in the, you know, in the writers that are there. And there are those working in the industry.
You know? Oh yeah. Also the, for new Captain Marvel, I know is the writer. She's actually is of Muslim descent, and she's doing an amazing job on the new Captain Marvel. She's doing a great job for the female Captain Marvel. It totally changed around the whole storyline for this particular character from a Muslim background. They said she's doing a phenomenal job.
Right. What's her name?
Oh God, that's up. I mean, but I've heard nothing but good things, which is great. They actually hired a female writer is actually of a Muslim descent. I mean, you can't beat that. It comes from that culture, which is great. She can actually knows how to relate to the people that's reading it because she comes from that background, which is awesome.
Right. No, definitely. I mean, you know, for as great of a writer as, let's say, Dan Slott or Tom DeFalco are, they shouldn't be writing female characters, you know. You should have a woman because a woman's going to understand a woman's perspective. Well, maybe with the exception of Ben, but
I am very sensitive.
Yes. especially every 28 days, but the,
Ooh, yeah,
but yeah, exactly. And again, and then if you want to make the character of Muslim descent, it should be a female of Muslim descent, you know, or at least somebody who understands the culture, you know, Not, you know, I could never write that, you know, it's as a writer, I'm sure you can attest this. What's the first thing that you always hear if you take writing classes is write what you know.
Yes. Think inside your box all the time. It's and that's the thing that when I do panels for conventions and I love doing panels for conventions. I love doing them. But I do want to sit in the audience and watch and add my own little commentary. But when I'm doing a panel, people say, Eric, your panels were freaking awesome. I said, we've never been to panels before. I said, well, the reason why is because I work for myself. Marvel and DC doesn't own me. I can talk about anything I want to talk about and actually tell you the trueness of what we do. I'm not here for a political agenda. I'm here to give you the facts and truth, what I know from what I've seen. And that's what makes the panel so much different. I said, well, look, if you work for Marvel and DC, you might want to leave the room because this gets really down and serious. If you think I work for one of those guys, you're flying a kite that's going to be struck by lightning one day. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. But if you are true to yourself, you want to put out a creative work that is your own, I could teach you that. That's what I do. I'm a writing counselor. I'll make sure that your story is going to sell and people are going to love it. But you have to be let go of the DC and Marvel thing. I said, it's cool. If you go work for them, unless you have an inside beat, you can work for them. But other than that, you're going to be like the guy that's going to be like, oh, I wish, hopefully they hire me. Wishing and hoping doesn't do a damn thing for you. You got to go out there and strive for yourself and make your own product. I always tell people, build your own characters. Do not rely on Marvel or DC doing them for you. Do your own.
Right.
Now, if your character is good enough, they might come and hunt you out, but don't hunt them out. Let them hunt you out. But do your own thing.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's getting more and more true that the people that are, you know, industry vets that have been doing this for a long time are even now starting to jump off from Marvel and DC and they want to do their own creator owned books. I mean, it's, you know, everyone I talk to anymore that's just like, yeah, I want to do my own thing. It was nice writing Spider-Man or Daredevil for, you know, 20 years, but it wasn't mine. Someone else created it.
Even look at George Perez. He went out with Boom, him and Stan Lee, and he's working with Boom, but he's creating these characters. He always wanted to create it, but never had ownership of it because, you know, if he worked for Marvel DC, they would own it because he worked on their clock, and you can't really do that. So now he's working with Boom, and he's producing his own line of comic books now. I'm not sure how far he is along his process, but I know a couple of friends use as a reference for his characters and their personalities for the stuff he's doing right now.
Right. Yes. So it's, and yeah, I mean, it's just going to keep happening, I think, too, that, you know, and that's the whole thing, is that you're going to probably really have the young, hungry guys doing Marvel and DC books. And I think you're going to see more and more of the veterans jumping off. So again, there's also another reason to feature, you know, these younger guys coming into the fold now, because they're working for the big two and, you know, they should be featured. So we've been talking about this for a while, but how can people get involved, you know, and get their voice heard about this situation and if they want to do something about it?
Well, I would suggest mainly is to contact the guys that organize the conventions around your area, or the ones you go to, and mm-hmm. say, look, I've been going to your convention for plus and plus years, you know, and that person may not be, let's say the person's Caucasian, but you know, say, but you know, I read black books, I read Asian, I read Latino character creation books. Why can't you feature people of that descent? I know a couple guys that are great, but they come to the convention, but you never feature them as part of your lineup for as a featured guest. And they should have their mm-hmm. they should have the time to shine in the light like the rest of them, because they do hard work, and most of them still work a full time job and still trying to create something on the side. And so give these people some time to really show what they can do and let people get around that table and learn from them, because you never know. The thing is about even with Nightseeker. The thing is with my books is this. I said once you read Nightseeker, I don't want to just entertain you. I want to give you something that's going to add to your life when you get done with that book. It's going to make you feel better about yourself and people around you. That's the essence of what I give to the industry, is that I give you a moral story that will add to the person that you are, and you learn more about yourself at the same time.
Right.
Now, as far as Marvel and DC goes, they're there for entertainment value only. They're not really there to really teach your story, teach you about yourself. It's just to entertain you. I think nowadays, these people that are coming up there are of independent creation. They're telling more about their life stories and what they go through and what they struggle with. And I think people learn more from those books than they will from Marvel DC, because they've been really there, you know. And people from Marvel DC, the writers there, they can only just write what they know. So they live inside that bubble. But when you have a guy that comes from the street that has probably been around drugs or very, very true violence, and actually can show it in the book because they've been there, they've done that, they can really blow a person's mind and say, whoa, is it really like that? Yes, it's really like that. And it just makes, it just opens people's minds up to say, look, these stories are real. But at the same time, we put that little sci-fi twist in it, make you believe that, you know, ooh, man, it's a superhero or a sci-fi twist in it. And I can really relate to the character because it comes from my essence, from where I come from. I think that's the real driving point we need now for the stories coming out, is that it has to be grounded to more realism to where a person comes from.
Right. No, definitely. And actually, though, what I was getting at when I was trying to lead you into talking about, you have a petition, right, on change.org?
Yeah, it's on change.org. And the actual petition itself, I was trying to think what it was really truly called. I was like, I look on the side myself. I think it was pretty much called Diversity of Featured Guests for Comic-Con. And that's pretty much, and I said, like I said, it's mainly going to petition, signing it, and also signing it and actually sharing it is the way to really make a change in the comic book, you know, the Comic-Con industry.
Right.
And people need to know more about it. And I said, well, if you noticed, I said, if you really stopped and looked around you, look at the guest list. Every time you want to, everything's pretty much the same. I always hate to say this, but vanilla. But like, where's the chocolate? Where's the pecan? You know, where's the mint chocolate chip? You know, people of these different descents, they're not represented. Right. They're not represented.
We are a nation of many flavors, and they should all be there.
Yes. I mean, we know you like the strawberry, Ben. So
You know, I like to experiment with all different flavors.
But Ben, what kinds have you gone to that you normally hit? Like, do you hit the bigger ones or the smaller ones?
Generally, I've been to some of the small ones. Obviously, we saw cross paths recently at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con. Also went to Wizard World recently. Was thinking about going to that again this year in Philly, but I hadn't committed to it yet. So it's a mix.
Okay. And of course, Dave, you go to, well, you always call him the big guy.
He goes
so.
To everything.
I go to everything my wife will let me go to, yes.
There you go.
Yeah, and I will say this, with the smaller cons, I feel like I see more diversity there, but I wonder if that's just because, you know, they don't know who to get, so they just ask everyone, and whoever says yes. It's not, oh, they're not sitting there going, oh, let's be more diverse and make sure that we, you know, ask a diverse group of writers and artists. It's kind of just like, we need people, we're a smaller con, let's just keep asking people till people agree. But the smaller cons, you guys should listen to this and keep that in mind as you're planning going forward. Keep that diversity going, you know?
And it's true. You'd be surprised. The smaller cons actually have a more impact in the community, because with the big cons, you have these big, huge stars, and, you know, and most of the time it's spent people trying to get signatures done, you know?
Right.
And they don't have time to really go around the con like last Philly. I mean, I hate to say this though, but I've heard at least half the crowd that signed up for pictures with Froggy or whoever the photo people were for that convention, about 25 to 50% of the people wanted their money back because they spent so much time in line trying to get that signature, talk to that star. They spent all the time doing there and never got around to other people they need to get to. And some cons are just sometimes are just too big and too consuming to really relax and enjoy yourself.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's so true. I've said this, I don't know how many times, in the last at least 10 years, well, maybe 5 years, it's gotten worse, that they've become, the bigger cons have become just such media events. It's not even, anymore about the comic books and the writers and the artists. It's about, oh, who's in what movie? Can we get them to show up and sign autographs? And, you know, they're trying to also make it about breaking news. You know, I mean, look at all of the news that came out of San Diego over the last 6 years, you know, cause Marvel used it as their place to make all their big announcements about what was going on with the movies. And now DC's doing the same thing. And, you know, that's all great. And that's all good, but we're forgetting about what these were about originally. The New York art show, comic art show,
yeah,
was originally started as celebrating the art of comic books and people that wanted to collect the original art, you know, and people that loved comic books would gather, bring their collection. They would meet out in the hallways of the hotels because they couldn't even get the ballroom. And they would trade comic books with people like, oh, you've got a Fantastic Four number 3. I need that. I'll trade you my Silver Surfer number 2. And they would sit there and talk about comic books all day. And then the artists and the writers heard about this. And of course it was happening in New York City where the comic books are created, and they went to go check it out. Like, oh, wow, there's people meeting and talking about this stuff. Let's see what it's about, you know? And then they started coming to them regularly and would start giving talks and panels, and it grew from there. You know, it's just become such a pop culture thing now that, yeah, when you go to a bigger con, you can spend an all day in two lines to get 2 autographs, and then that's it, and not experience the rest of the convention at all. So,
yeah, and that's the thing about, I would say, I hate to say this, but I would say maybe start limiting the amount of autographs. You know, I say, okay, look, I even do online, like pre-sale. Pre-sale online, you know the timing of the con. I said, pre-sale, look, your slot of people should come at this time, your slot of people should come at this time. Okay, once you're done with that time slot, okay, now go explore the convention now. Yeah, you have time to actually look around and, you know, admire the stuff to read. And don't forget, the reason why these people are where they are is because these creators and comic book guys existed to even start the con. And, you know, you gotta start giving more of a recognition to people who actually started the idea of having a comic con. And the reason why it's there. And San Diego, you might as well call it the Hollywood con because it's not truly a comic book con anymore. It's actually about Hollywood.
Yes.
I hate to say that, but it's kind of true.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so true. I mean, I wonder what would happen if an actual, you know, convention said, you know what, we're really going to just be about the comic books and, you know, maybe we'll have two celebrities and the rest will be all about, you know, artists and comic books.
Well, there's already one that exists. And Mike from New York Comic Con, the guy that runs Artist Alley, don't forget about that one. It's called the New York Special Edition Expo. And that takes
place. No, that is true. Yes.
Those guys really have it together, and they show these independent people. They have like about 4 or 5 or 6 different guests, which is fine. But you should see the amount of independent artists and writers at this particular convention. It's great. They do a great job because the whole purpose of that convention is to expo people of new talent.
Right. Yes. Yeah. No. And they started that last year, right? And they had the second.
Correct. Movie. Yeah, and I was there the first year. Yeah, and. It wasn't that much foot traffic, but it was okay because, you know, it was a first-year con.
Right, and that was at the Javits, correct?
Yes, it was Javits, correct. Yeah. Now, this year is actually at Pier 94, I believe, on the waterfront.
Okay.
Yeah, so it moved. Mainly, our main thing is to advertise that, okay, it moved, so you guys got to know, be aware that it went to a different location, but we are still here. It'll still be in June, so come on out and support what we do.
And that is... I will say, I mean, I haven't been to it myself, but I actually know a couple people who have been to it, and you're right. There's no celebrities, there's none of that business. It's really for the comic book fans. And I think if people want to experience what comic book conventions were like before, you know, X-Men and Spider-Man hit it big in the theaters, they should go to those conventions.
Because,
I mean, geez, I remember going to them and being like, you know, the quote-unquote celebrities you had were can't think of his name, the Chewbacca. Chewbacca, the guy who played Boba Fett and the guy who played R2-D2. They were the big stars at the very first comic book convention I went to. And the rest was all artists. You know, Marvel and DC had their big tables set up. There were lines to meet Jim Lee. There were lines to meet Eric Larson, you know, and guys like that. There weren't really lines for the quote-unquote celebrities that were there. I'm sure Lou Ferrigno was there, too.
He's about at least about 80% of the big cons. He's normally there.
Right.
Peter Mayhew, by the way.
Thank you. So that's the whole thing, you know, and it was like, and it didn't matter that there weren't celebrities there, you know, and it just, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, you know, this movie kind of hit it big. Let's see if we can get someone from the X-Men movies. Let's see if we can get someone from the Spider-Man movies, which is all well and good. And then, you know, when I see, I'm sorry, Ralph Macchio or Fred Savage going to be at one of these conventions, I'm like, what? Why? Who was the big one in New York last year? It was only there for, I think, one day. Oh, Sylvester Stallone. He's a great actor. He's been in a lot of great action movies, but he's been in nothing that's comic book related. Why was he there? You know,
there was Rambo, the cartoon series.
I don't know, right? It just seemed like, it really felt like, and no offense to Sylvester Stallone, because if you ever want to come on this podcast, you're more than welcome. But it really just felt like he knew some people that were going to these conventions and meeting people, getting and signing autographs and making money at it too, because he charged,
I think it was close to $500 a picture.
It was like $500.
And he sold out.
Yes. And he sold out. Yes, because it was all pre-sale with him. It wasn't, there was no, you know, pay as you get there kind of thing. And he sold out. And it was just like, really? like, is that what this is really about now? Like, and they used to have separate quote unquote autograph shows. I mean, if you want to do that and Sylvester Stallone wants to show up at that, fine, but stay away from New York Comic Con. It shouldn't be about the comics. Oh, so yeah, I know it drives me nuts. So sign Eric's petition. The link is going to be in the description of this episode.
Well, I have it. It's called Comic Conventions, a call for a more diverse ethnic and minority representation of featured guest artists, writers at comic book conventions. So, I mean, pretty much put down comic book conventions, it should show up on the search anyway, because no one really puts up something like that anyway. Comic book conventions should show on the search for change.org.
Yes, yes. So do that. Sign it. Get your voice heard.
Yeah. And also what's great about, I used a picture of, I combined the three pictures together. Number one was Jack Kirby, because number one, he was one of the leading artists of our century that really showed diversity in his work. But also, he was pretty much an idea man about the way a character should look. It didn't matter what race it came from. It didn't matter their background. He said, I want to show people of different ethnic descent, of different parts of the world, because he said, I am of the world. I want to show this unique people, because it needs to be, their stories need to be told. I'd rather be the artist to tell their story. And then you have Dwayne McDuffie is also in this. And unfortunately, he passed away a couple years ago. I did meet him at San Diego Comic-Con. And just a very good soul guy. Very down to earth. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a little entourage to him, but he wasn't about that. He was about being, look, I'm just a regular guy that wants to tell a story. I want to use people of different color and not just all white guys. I don't mind doing white guys, but I do want to tell a more diverse story of different characters. I can bring that to the industry. And then he did do that. And most people don't believe that he did Ben 10. I said, yeah, this guy did Ben 10. He said, really? So, yeah, this guy really wrote the idea for Ben 10. He's a great creator. And then, of course, you have me, Night Seeker, in there. But, you know, I do my thing. But it's just showing off these different class and diversity of color to show people, well, even not just that, actually, people of different sex orientation. Even I dive into that with the newest series I'm doing right now. It's called The Merge. And Merge is a character out of the West Coast. Of course, now, spoiler, you know, you guys are on this. Merge is actually, you find out, at first he thinks he's actually is a heterosexual character. Mm-hmm. Later on he finds out that he's actually is gay. He has no idea about it. Until later on he finds his friend likes him, and he had no idea he did. And it went from there. But I got tired of reading stories of gay characters in Marvel and DC because they were outwardly gay. There was no really secret about it. I said, okay, we already knew that you were this. This one here is that it's more of discovery where he's learning that I really had feelings for this I never expected. It's scary. Oh Lord, really. And I wanted, because me going through that, okay, spoiler, yes, I am gay also. But I don't preach about it, but it's just who I am. But also, I'm putting the film in the character of what I was going through when I was starting discovering my own self. And it's a story that I get to tell of myself through another character's eye. And I'm enjoying it. But as far as Night Seeker came, he was pretty much, Night Seeker's my kid. And I wanted him heterosexual. I thought about making him gay, but I said, you know what? I want to keep this guy regular style. I want to get into the world first. And then I can tell the real story I want to tell later on. And pretty much I can separate the two, but later on the two will meet. And I can't wait for that part where I get into that book where the two characters meet and they talk about each other. And it's just a great feeling where I get this part of myself out there in the industry where I say, look, it's okay to be gay. It's okay to be bi. It's okay to be transgender. As long as you do something that is important in the world and you represent yourself in a good, positive manner, no one will care where you come from. No one will care about your color. You're telling a great story. That's all that matters to people is that you tell a great story.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I will say this, that very rarely do I read a story, or especially a comic book, that has a gay character in it. And again, there are very few mainstream gay characters in the comic book world. And there's a lot of, you know, I've yet to read one that's written well. You know, like Like you were saying, like, for some reason, when they say, okay, this character is gay, they then make that the defining characteristic of the character. And it's like, no, that's just their sexual preference. That has nothing to do with who they are as a person. I mean, yes, it might make them make some personal decisions based on that and whatnot. But, you know, the, oh, they're going to wear a purple spandex and go to a disco all night. It's like, no. I mean, it drives me nuts. My best friend since fifth grade, is gay. And it's like, yes, like, yeah, he went through a stage in his life where he went to bars and whatnot, but it wasn't his defining characteristic, you know? I mean, he just got married last year because it finally became legal in Pennsylvania, but he's been with his partner since 2000, and it's like, he's just a regular guy. Like, if you met him on the street, sorry, people who are homophobic, you would never know he's gay because it's not a defining characteristic of who he is. So why are we writing gay characters that way, you know? It drives me nuts, sorry.
That's true. Like they're on a gay blade. It's like, I wish someone actually do a comic book for that, just for kicks. I'll probably read just for the hell of it.
Yeah. See, there you go, Ben. That's your comic that you can work on.
I'm already working on it right now.
Okay, good. speaking of ambiguously gay characters.
No way. Do tell.
No.
Are you coming out right now, Dave?
I just wanted to make sure we didn't go an episode without mentioning this. I just wanted to talk about, you know, let's talk about comic book movie stuff a little bit. The big one being, of course, that today the Batman v Superman trailer was shown in theaters, across the country, and you could get tickets to go see it for free. And
for some reason, like, I didn't go.
Really?
He got the tickets and he didn't go. And and the question that was asked by everyone in the world, why would I go to a theater to watch a preview?
Yeah, that's the question I ended up asking myself at a certain point, especially since the trailer ended up online over the weekend.
Yeah.
But I found out that the reason you would go, and they didn't make this, they didn't tell you this,
of course not,
is that everyone that went got a free ticket to see the movie a week before it actually opens.
Uh-huh.
So you go to an early premiere of Batman v Superman in 2016 if you want to see the preview.
Saying I should have gone.
Yeah, Ben, we should have went. Instead of recording with Eric, we should have went to the theater to watch a preview.
Well, one thing about the whole thing is that they delayed it being released. And hopefully for good reason, I'm hoping, because right now Marvel is wiping them off the map. I'm sorry to say,
yes.
But Jesus, come on.
Oh, they are. We discussed that a lot on our podcast, and I've debated this several times with John. I wish he was on right now to berate him on this, because we've had the discussion a few times. There was a point where it shared a release date with Captain America 3. Now, when that was true, we knew very little details about either movie other than the fact that Batman was going to be in this Superman sequel, and Captain America 3 was just Captain America 3 at that point. And for some reason, John stuck to his guns for a long time that more people will want to go see Batman and Superman than to see a Captain America movie. But we're in a very different state now. We know it's going to be about Civil War, a very interesting comic book event. We know an array of characters. Essentially, it's going to be another Avengers movie. And with the preview that Warner Brothers and DC dropped this weekend, it doesn't really sell the movie in a way that I'm really eager to see it. I actually showed the trailer to my kids and my daughter, who is huge, huge fangirl in all of these types of things. You know, has even come to some of the cons with me. You know, she afterwards said to me, and she's 11, she's like, Daddy, do we have to go see that movie?
Ooh.
Right. I just laughed when he told me that, and I'm sitting there going, if they can't reach their target demographic, and I'm sorry, but that should be their target demographic for a Batman Superman movie, and if they can't reach them with a preview, they're in trouble, you know?
Well, yeah, well, the thing, here's another thing also. about Superman, they are still going on this very dark present for the character.
Yes.
And I think this is going in a wrong direction for the character. But also, they haven't shown Wonder Woman yet. Now, the thing is everyone's saying, well, she's not supposed to be like bulky and everything like that. Okay, but at least show the outfit, at least show the character. Say, okay, let's see her perform somewhat. Mm-hmm. They haven't even shown that in the preview at all. It's like, what are you guys waiting for? What are you guys waiting for?
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's I don't understand that at all. And one of the things I keep wondering, when they show the shots of Batman, Ben Affleck, in the armored suit,
mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong, but it almost looks CGI to me. Like, that Ooh. Suit doesn't really exist, you know? And I'm looking at it, I'm like, is that going to really translate well? I mean, I know that a lot of Iron Man's stuff is CGI on the screen and whatnot. So, I mean, maybe they'll get away with it. But I was really hoping that, you know, when they were having the fight scenes, it would just be two guys in a suits fighting, you know? So we'll see. I don't know.
They've been adding weight to himself. He actually bulked up for the Batman role.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you haven't seen it, just look up the Batman v Superman trailer. It's all over YouTube and the internet. And there's a scene, Ben, you could back me up on this if you agree, where he's getting out of the Batmobile and he's huge. I mean, and it's not an armored suit.
Is it padding or is it really him?
it's really him. I mean, and it's just like, oh my goodness. Like, which it's funny. I was talking about this in a group online the other day. It was like the DC Cinematic Universe group. And of course, the rabid DC fanboys were all like, oh, he looks so great. It's the best looking Batman ever. And some of the other people on the other side of the fence, me being one of them, was like, he's kind of too big to be Batman at this point. You Ooh. Know, like Christian Bale was muscular but lean. He was built like somebody who's a fighter. You know, you look at a lot of MMA fighters, they're not overly bulky because too much bulk slows you down.
Right.
You lose flexibility. You know, I mean, he's almost like to Arnold levels, you know, in these previews. And it's just like, it's kind of scary.
Well, so was him and Carrot Top hanging out together or something?
Nice.
That was a good poll. Yes. Oh my god. As far as I know, no. But that would be an interesting take on it. Yeah. So I mean, we'll see. You know, again, it's a year out. I mean, they are building this up and building this up and building this up. That's something else that Ben and I were talking about. Is like, is it going to? That's the problem. It's so hyped that if it doesn't live up to the hype, it's going to be a disappointment.
Well,
even if it's a good movie.
Yeah, I'll tell you what is not a bunch of hype, because actually it's looking impressive as hell, is the new Star Wars.
Yes,
absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, I cried. I will admit it. I cried at the newest preview, especially the last.
Especially at Han.
Yes, yes, when he says, we're home.
We're home, baby, we're home.
Yeah, that's... I'm gonna ask you guys this real quick. Do you have any thoughts on why his was the only face they showed so far?
He's the least grizzled looking in the three.
Oh man! Well, I did see. I think on ABC News this morning, I think they showed the cast, the older cast, and Mark Hamill. He's losing a little bit of stomach. He's cutting down the beer. I think he's going to take this role very seriously.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've seen leaked on set photos. With him with the beard and in like a brown robe, you know, the Obi-Wan looking, you know, mm-hmm. Jedi master kind of thing. You know, so I mean, he's got that going on. You know, who knows what, who knows how Carrie's going to look. I'm sure she's not going to be wearing a metal bikini.
Ooh. And I'll also see Jabba skinny. That'd be funny if you were still alive today.
So yeah, but yeah, no, I mean, it's just, you know, and that the voiceover in that, the reflection on the, Return of the Jedi, line where he's like, you know, the Force runs strong in my family. My father has it. Yeah. I have it. My sister has it. And then he goes, and you have it. So obviously he's talking to someone in his family, you know, but they don't, obviously we don't know yet who.
I would hedge to guess it's Han's and Leia's kid.
Yeah, that's my guess as well.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait till Christmas to find out.
You know? Yeah, they're gonna make a ton of money.
I have to say, for a movie as big as this is, as anticipated as a movie this is, Abrams and Disney are doing an amazing job of keeping everything about it secret. I mean, you know, yeah, they've shown us stuff, but we still don't really know what's going on. We don't know what the story is. We don't know how the old cast and the new cast tie in together. You know, it's amazing how much they've kept under wraps.
But you know what's funny, though? No one said anything lately about, hey, there's a Black Stormtrooper. What the hell's going on? No one said anything. No one said jack since the newer trailers are coming out. No one has said a damn word. So it's like, look, accept it, move on, and let's have some fun.
Right. I think my guess, looking at the previews, yes, and for all the people who've made disparaging remarks about a Black Stormtrooper, like, really, get over yourself. If you watch the movie, if you watch the TV show Rebels, Star Wars Rebels, you know that they started recruiting people. They stopped using clones after the Clone Wars. So they're not all the same person under the uniform anymore. They are different people. You just never saw their faces because they all have helmets on. So regardless of that, my guess on it is that he's going to end up being the girl that they're showing is Han and Leia's daughter, and she's the Jedi, and that he is a stormtrooper, but it's the war's been going on for, you know, 30 plus years now, and he's starting to question the loyalty to the Empire, and he's, you know, he sides now with the Rebels. Like, the two of them have a relationship somehow, and he ends up joining up with the Rebels and helping them in some, you know, great way in the story. That's my guess. I'm just putting it out there. We won't know.
So we actually might have a mixed baby later on? Really? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know.
Hey. So it'll basically go to the dark side or the light side? We'll figure that one out.
They'll reveal the third side.
The third side?
I'm not even going to come up with a name for what that side is going to be.
The striped side? The zebra side? I don't know.
Remember, let the story unfold by on its own. That's why these creators do what they do. Absolutely. You know, enjoy their work. Enjoy their work.
Yes.
Right. Yes. And the last thing I'm going to mention, I don't know if you saw this today, Eric, but there was a quote-unquote leaked after-credits scene released for Age of Ultron, which Whedon came out and said, there is no after-credits scene. Don't stay in the theater. And this leaked scene, and for those who have seen it, I will say this. If it's fake, it's the best faked thing I've ever seen in my life.
Huh.
So, Ben, do you want to describe it?
Yeah, I'll agree. It was a very, if it's fake, it's very well done fake. And with Joss's statement, he did say that, but he said that like a week or two ago, not recently. So that could have been to throw people off, or this could have been a decision that was made later in the game. But yeah, so essentially there's this YouTube video where it looks like, you know, the one of these cam, you know, side view-ish recordings in a theater, and there's Spanish subtitles and everything. And if it's a fake, it's a great homage to the Batman v Superman trailer leak that went out end of last week in that respect. But yeah, sort of this oblique angle, and it shows just the end of the credit roll, and then goes to this really blurry scene, and then you start seeing it clarified by a squeegee clearing lines of, you know, stuff on the window, and you see the Avengers Tower outside on the left side of the window being cleaned, and as the cleaning comes further to the right, you see a reveal of Spidey sticking to another building in the background, you know, and starts yelling, hey, you missed a spot. over to your left. And it's cute. It's clever. I'll give it that. I think it's a great, if it's real, it's a great little nod to show that they are going to bring him into the fold. But and if it's fake, it was very well done.
Now, one thing is, was it the Miles suit or was it the Peter Parker suit?
It was, I would say it seemed more like a Peter Parker suit. But if
yeah, I forget that.
If it was, he seemed young. It was a younger Peter Parker than we've seen in either of the runs of the movies.
That's cool.
Right. Yeah.
That's cool.
So I you know, so if it's real, cool. If it was faked, and you're the guy who faked this clip, please email us. You know, Dave@superheroespeak.com or Ben@superheroespeak.com, and let us know. And we want to have you on the show because
bravo,
damn, it's really good.
Yo, all right.
So yeah, I mean, it was just it. You got to look it up. Just you know, once you get off here, Google leaked Age of Ultron post credit scene, and there'll be at least 10 hits right away of all the different sites that are sharing it right now, and of course the YouTube site, and you decide for yourself, Eric, if it's real or fake. It's tough to tell. There are things about it that make it seem fake, but it seems like a lot of effort to go through to fake something like this. A lot of effort.
So, I mean, well, we all seen that that Joker, Batman, Predator, Alien clip, which was freaking amazing. If it's that quality, anything's possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
This takes it to a whole nother level. I'm telling you, you gotta watch this clip.
I'll do that tonight. I'll do that tonight.
All right. So, all right. I think, we are.
Yeah.
What are we at here? Oh, we're at like an hour and 10. So.
Oh, we did good. We did very well.
I think we did good. Yes. You have anything you want to add in closing?
Mainly, I would say look out for new artists. Don't be afraid to go to people's table and ask them about their storyline. What entice them to buy your product? Now, me, as far as selling Night Secret books, selling a novel at a comic book convention, it's hard enough as it is. But one thing about my product is that I believe in what I do is because I'll tell a customer, say, look, if you buy one of my books, I will guarantee the reader that you'll enjoy it. For any reason you don't like it, you let me know. I'll send cash money to your home. And also money should go back to me. And people said, you can't beat the guarantee. I get it every time to any customer. And, you know, and also look out for, I have a new magazine coming out sometime later in this year. Me and Jabbar Brown from Delaware. I can't tell you what the name of the book is yet, but it's going to be for barbershops and tattoo shops. But it's also a way to display artists and writers and their work in different type of medias and different type of work industries. But I'll tell more about that later on. And also Star Enforcers, my co-writer, Miles Simon, he's almost done with his last chapter. It's a mixture of Star Wars and Star Trek. So I'm getting people from both sides of the fence that said, oh, we can't stand Star Wars. Oh, we can't stand Star Trek. Okay, look, why mash both together, the philosophies together, and make a book that everyone's going to enjoy?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you can't beat that.
Sounds awesome.
And merge. Yep.
Yes. Hey, I've seen them do I think it was IDW did a Star Trek Doctor Who crossover. So hey.
Yes.
Anything is possible.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So for everyone listening, click on the link, sign up, put your signature on the change.org petition. If you're a person of color, if you're a woman, if you're gay, if you're Hispanic, and you're a fan of comic books, you listen to this podcast, and you go to conventions, and you're like Eric, and or even me, even Ben a little bit, and you're like, hey,
no one's like me.
How come it doesn't seem like everyone's being fairly represented here? You know, go talk to people. Go talk to the people organizing the convention. Talk to the volunteers, get them talking, and they'll bring it up to the people in charge. Trust me, volunteers will yap. You know, change starts with you. Change starts, you know, don't wait for someone else to make the change. You know, you start talking, join the conversation here and, you know, make it happen.
As, the Dalai Lama says, or Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
So,
yes, indeed.
On that note, boys and girls, as we say each and every week, don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn.
Okay, what are you doing?
Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh.
Well, there are better ways to join the conversation.
Really? Like what?
Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest.
Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google+?
I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book videos, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list.
Cool!
Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic?
Nope, I'm going to try to answer the Stump the Geek question.
Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl?
Oh, that's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. Run for your lives!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's going to get caught in the door.